And we turn now to Libya. For much of the past 30 years, the United States has considered Libya a rogue state. In 1986, following terrorist attacks at the Rome and Vienna airports that killed dozens of people, including 19 Americans, then-President Ronald Reagan announced that he was severing diplomatic and economic ties with the North African country.
By providing material support to terrorist groups which attack U.S. citizens, Libya has engaged in armed aggression against the United States under established principles of international law.
President Ronald Reagan in January 1986. A lot's changed in the past 17 years. Yesterday, the United Nations Commission on Human Rights elected Libya to the chairmanship of that organization. The vote came over the objections of the United States. An administration spokesman said, quote, "A country with this record does not merit a leadership role." Joining us to talk about yesterday's UN vote and where Libya falls in today's war on terrorism, a journalist, Scott Anderson. His cover story on Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi appeared in this past Sunday's New York Times magazine. And he's on the phone now with us from Park City, Utah. And Scott Anderson, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks. Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
Thank you. And if listeners want to get in on this conversation, our phone number, 800-989-8255, email totn@npr.org. And Scott Anderson, first of all, who voted to put Libya in charge of the Human Rights Commission and who did not?
Well, the Human Rights Commission works on the, on these kind of odd rules where it's a rotating leadership. And I'm not sure that it's actually in the rules or it's just a custom that's developed, but this year, the leadership was to pass to an African nation. And what Gaddafi and Libya have done over the past 10 years is forge all sorts of economic and political ties with sub-Saharan Africa and basically got all the African votes lined up to vote for him on the UN Human Rights Committee.
So I think 17 abstentions, 3 opposed, and more than 30 in favor?
Those are the numbers I saw. And the other thing is that it's a blind vote, so none of the nations had to come out and say which way they were voting. And so I think certainly that helped Libya also. But because the leadership was supposed to go to an African country, and Libya made sure that no other countries were nominated forward.
Yet this is the UN Commission on Human Rights, after all. As
right.
The Bush administration was quick to point out, the Libyan record on human rights is certainly less than perfect.
Right. Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, there's been, quite beyond the international stuff that Gaddafi has been involved in the past of funding and supporting terrorist groups, their domestic human rights record is not very strong. There's estimated to be about 1,000 political prisoners. There's occasionally executions of political prisoners. It's not a repression anywhere along to the degree of, say, Iraq or Iran, but it's certainly not a free and liberal country.
Now, you were in Libya recently to speak with Muammar Gaddafi at his compound in Tripoli. What is he like now?
He's a fascinating guy. He still looks enough like he did from his bad boy heyday to be instantly recognizable. He's certainly aged. He's 60 years old now, and he has very much. I think the first thing that struck me about him that I hadn't been prepared for, given his fiery reputation, is that he has this aura almost of a mystic. When we were sitting down talking, he kind of stares into space, and it seems like he's almost daydreaming. And then he'll turn in an instant and be intensely focused. He talks in a very soft, almost a mutter of a voice. His gestures are very slow and deliberate, and you can almost feel like you're talking to someone who's heavily sedated. But then all of a sudden, it will disappear when a topic comes up that is something he's particularly interested in.
We're listening with Scott Anderson, who wrote the New York Times Magazine cover story on Muammar Gaddafi, published this past Sunday. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Scott, what is Colonel Gaddafi? Does he still call himself Colonel Gaddafi, by the way?
No. And the interesting thing is, in Libya, no one refers to him by name. He's simply known as the leader. And I spent 3 years trying to set up this interview, and in all my correspondence back and forth with the Libyan government, it was quite awkward because I could never refer by name of who it was I wanted to interview. It was always just the leader.
So the second reference is just L?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask, I mean, he always denied that, that Libya was engaged in terrorism, had ever engaged in terrorism, but what are his views on the use of terrorism to achieve political goals?
Well, it's complicated. One thing he's done in the last 15 years, while the rest of the world has been paying very little attention to him, he's been mending fences with the European governments. He now has full diplomatic relations with Britain and Italy and France, and virtually all of Europe. And the way he explains the period of the 70s and 80s when he was supporting a lot of what he would call national liberation movements, which we might call terrorist groups, he described that as the era of nationalism and of national identity. And he says, you know, now we've moved into a new era, it's the era of, you know, regional and economic cooperation. So we have to look at the new face of the world. And certainly what he is trying to do now, since September 11th, you know, Gaddafi has always been from the strain of the Arab nationalist wing of the Arab world, as opposed to the Islamic fundamentalist world. He's always been bitterly opposed to the Islamic fundamentalists, and fundamentalists have been responsible for a lot of the assassination attempts against him over the years. So I think Gaddafi sees what happened in September 11th as a way to kind of come back into the good graces of the United States. And what he said to me is, you know, now Libya is in a common trench fighting a common enemy with America. Whether the American government views it quite that way is not at all clear.
There are some people who would say that the American attacks on Libya eventually did persuade Mr. Gaddafi, whatever he calls himself now, whatever his first honorific is, to abandon the course of international terrorism. Is that view given any credit in Tripoli?
Well, I think that probably what really changed Libya, I think it was a combination of things. It was the UN sanctions that came about after the bombing of the Pan Am flight over Lockerbie. These economic sanctions, as opposed to sanctions that were in place elsewhere, were very, very strategically and very carefully drawn. And what they essentially did was really cripple the Libyan oil economy, the economy is almost solely based on that, and also really isolated Libya from the rest of the world. There was a travel ban to and from Libya. And I think that on a personal level, Gaddafi has always seen himself as an international leader and as a figure on the world stage. And I think that being basically put into a box probably really infuriated him and frustrated him. And I think that he realized he just wasn't going to be able to do what he was doing in the 1970s and 80s. He was going to stay in that box as long as he did that. And it brought about this sort of change. I think that's probably the primary reason.
We just have a minute left, but when President Bush mentioned the axis of evil, you have the feeling that perhaps Colonel Gaddafi let out his breath in a big sigh of relief when the list was read and he wasn't on it.
Yeah, and there are growing signs that within the administration, among the hawks in the administration over the past 6-7 months, that they're expanding the axis of evil, and Libya is on it. And people I was talking with in the government, they were saying, you know, among the hawks, Libya is either number 2 or number 3 on the list of candidates for regime change. North Korea may have just jumped the queue, but they're certainly within the real militant branch of the administration. They have not forgiven what happened in the 1970s and 80s.
Scott Anderson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Scott Anderson wrote the cover story for the New York Times Magazine about Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, and he was with us by phone from Park City, Utah. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.